And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's going on, everybody? DJ Bucky here, Move the Sticks, coming at you. We are in the middle of the second week of the NFL preseason. I think we're only one more Saturday to go before we get some college football games going on. So, Bucky, this thing is in full gear right now, and finally the games are going to start to matter here pretty soon.
Yeah, it's been exciting. I think the one thing that has really popped up is kind of seeing the reports on these joint practice sessions, how teams are beginning to get together and work together, being able to evaluate each other before you even put them on a preseason game, and then watching how your young guys perform in the preseason. It's a really exciting time. And because we're getting down to nut-cutting time, the next week or two will really determine who's on that final 53.
Well, I want to get to the joint practice thing in just a second, but let's tell everybody that's listening what we have coming up on today's episode. We're going to look at the three games we've already had this week in the preseason, what we saw in those three contests, some interesting quarterback discussions that Bucky and myself need to have on those three games. We're going to preview just a little nugget, one thing we're looking forward to in each of the remaining preseason games here in the second week. I'm going to talk about the little trip that I had over the last week. Went out to Florida State for a couple days. Bucky is a Tar Heel. I'm sure you can appreciate the free Florida State hat that I'm wearing today.
I can see it. But I'm okay because the Tar Heels own Florida State because we whooped them last year.
I know. I knew you were going there. I put it on a tee for you. But so we'll talk a little bit about my trip out there. I've got an article coming out early next week on five players that are kind of under the radar. Look, you know who these guys are. You've heard of them. They've got a good reputation in the public and with the media, but they have a reputation that's far beyond that when you talk to personnel evaluators. Scouts have been out there already visiting a bunch of these schools. So I've heard a couple of these names come up over and over again. So we'll get into one of those and hear a story from one of those players, an interview that we actually had with him not too long ago. So we got some college football to get to. We've got some preseason action to discuss. But Bucky, I want to get back to what you just said a minute ago, talking about these joint practices. I know on Twitter you were kind of going through that a little bit. Explain to those that might not get why more teams are doing this. And it starts with a trendsetter. Bill Belichick has really, really got involved in doing these joint practices, not just one team a year, doing it with a couple different teams each season.
You know, it's crazy. You know, the Patriots are always kind of like cutting edge. They're always at the forefront of the movement. Joint practices are basically when two teams get together and they practice for a couple of days, and they basically – conduct what would be a normal practice session, but they go against each other. So they will start off and do their normal warm-ups and things together. But then when you break up and start doing one-on-ones, 7-on-7 drills, 9-on-7, which is the inside run period, and 11-on-11 drills, you'll take one team, and we'll use this week, like the Patriots are going against the Houston Texans. So the Patriots offense will go against the Texans defense, and the Texans offense will go against the Patriots defense. And the beauty of it is you have an opportunity to finally evaluate your guys against other competition. You get a chance to see how they play in a very competitive yet controlled environment. And what the Patriots have done is they've taken it to the next level. They are really playing all of their starters in these joint practice sessions because there's a quick whistle. It's thud tempo. You don't take people to the ground. And then in preseason games, they're playing their backups because they don't have to expose their starters to injury. I really think it's a brilliant move. I think it's something that more teams are going to do. And I really get into it in deep detail in my notebook this week, which is already posted on .com.
Yeah, you got to check out Bucky's notebook. It's money every single week. And one of the things, Buck, I think that you touched on there with the value to these, in my opinion, look, we used to always take a week in the offseason, the teams I was with, and you would dedicate it to teams inside your division. So one day of practice, you would, you know, have a look from the other team. Okay, you're with the Ravens. We're going to see the Bengals look. So you got guys going off cards and trying to run the schemes that the Bengals run. The next day would be the Browns. The following day might be the Steelers. Well, it's one thing when you're, let's say you're a 4-3 base team, you know you're going to see some of those odd fronts throughout the year. And so you put up a card and you put guys in spots where they're supposed to be. That's one thing to try and mimic a look of a 34 team. It's another thing to practice for a couple days with a team that majors in it, that knows exactly what they're doing. This is what they do. So you get a chance to see different schemes and get full speed practice reps in what you mentioned there in a thud environment. So you're not going to get guys hurt. I mean, I think it is so valuable for these guys instead of working off of a card to actually play a team that runs a similar scheme to a team you're going to see during the regular season.
I absolutely agree. I think it's one of the best things that you can do. And because you really can control the environment in terms of the quick whistle, not letting the quarterback get hit, it allows you to really play the game without the exposure of injury. But another thing that allows you to do, it allows you to experiment without showing what you want to do to the football world. So in understanding, every practice is tape, but it's tape by each individual team. So the Patriots will get a copy, the Texans will have their own tape, but the rest of the league won't do that. When you play a preseason game, that tape is circulated and distributed to all 32 teams. So every team can now look at what you're trying to do from a tactical and schematic standpoint. Well, in these joint practices, you can do the things that you think you may want to save until the regular season. You can keep those things a secret but still work on them. I think it's a great move. There are a lot of benefits to the joint sessions, which is why we're seeing so many of these teams really engage in these practices because they're seeing the benefit from them.
No question. I think it's a brilliant idea, and I think we're going to continue to see more of it, especially when you have guys with the tree. You know, you've got a general manager who maybe has someone underneath him that's worked somewhere else, has left, and so you have those relationships. You have a coach who's had an assistant that gets a head coaching job somewhere. So there's a lot of connections you have, and you trust those guys. And I think even from a personnel standpoint, it's valuable to have, you know, keep your scouts in the building and be able to look at the back end of the roster of the team that you're working against for a couple of days. It might be a situation where a guy's going to get cut. It could be a situation where you say, hey, this where the numbers are, I don't think this guy's going to make your team. It's an area of need for us, whereas we're a little bit deeper maybe at this position that you need. And so you get a chance to be familiar with another roster and allows you to make some moves. I think you'll see some of these teams that have been participating in joint practices, you're going to see them claim players from those teams. And I bet you will see a trade or two once we get down to cut day.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that, DJ. And when you get a chance to practice against him, you get more than just the preseason game that you normally would get an opportunity to evaluate a player. You now get a couple practices. You get to see him in one-on-ones, how they look in seven-on-seven. You get to see them even in the special teams periods. So your assessment is far more detailed than it would be if it was simply just looking at a guy on preseason tape. I don't know what the potential downside to it is when it comes to these joint practice sessions. And I think more teams and more coaches, as they continue to have guys that they trust throughout the league, they will find a way to get these joint practice sessions because, I equate it to high school. It's almost like a high school jamboree where you're scrimmaging teams, you're able to get the tape. It really helps you prepare for the regular season. This is what teams are really moving to, and I think it's a great evaluation tool.
All right, before we get to these preseason games, you talked about something that's trend-setting here with what's going on with these joint practices. I actually want to touch on one thing on the college side before we get back to the NFL. Speaking of trends, I don't know if you saw this article. I read this the other day about Clemson and their strategy of rotating their receivers and playing with. They like to play with, you know, six or eight different receivers. Did you happen to run across that, Buck?
I did not see that article.
So here was the premise, and I thought this was brilliant. And it just said, look, we don't want guys running at, Say you get a receiver, going to have him run. He's going to be out there for, 80 snaps, 90 snaps, whatever, 60 snaps. He said, okay, the corner is usually not going to rotate that much on the defensive side of the ball. So if I'm hitting him with the vertical route on one play, I come back. It was actually Ohio State coach that even said this about why Ohio State is going to start rotating more corners. Because he said, we had a game last year. I don't know if it was the Clemson. It might have been the Clemson game.
Oh, it may have been
the
Ohio
State
bowl
game. Secondary coach said, we had a game where we got a corner out there. They bring out a receiver. They run a vertical. They take him out, put another fresh receiver in, run a vertical. Three plays in a row, three different receivers, all fresh as can be, all hitting him with verticals. And so they're just running your legs off these corners, man. And so having a bunch of different receivers you can keep fresh and rotate through the mix at the college level, I think it's brilliant, and it's an easy way to sell in recruiting as well. Hey, we're going to get all you guys in the mix, going to get you all on the field, get a chance to develop you, and the defense is going to have to react and start rotating some of these corners that they're going to run the wheels off these dudes.
That's a scary thing when you're Clemson, too, because they just picked up a couple. They're one of the top recruiting classes year in and year out with Dabo Swinney. But I watched a kid out of Knoxville. They stole him right out of Tennessee. T. Higgins is going to get some playing time.
Yeah.
Kid's just a freak athlete. And you're getting a guy like that who's a freshman coming off the bench and running, you're right, running people ragged because it's just a wave after wave of talented receivers coming in.
You know, it's just funny because that actually comes from – that's an old pro tactic where you would put – maybe the fourth or fifth wide receiver on the field, have him run a couple vertical routes against the number one corner of the opposing team. He goes out, your normal starter comes back in, and it's part of just wearing people down. I think Chip Kelly did something that I believe was revolutionary a while ago when he was at Oregon, when they would almost use the hockey line substitutions at Oregon. First defense would come out, second defense would come in. They were playing 20 to 22 guys on defense to make sure that their guys didn't wear down. I think as we're looking at the college game and with more teams using tempo, spread, hurry up, trying to really occupy 95 to 100 plays of space, you can't just have like a one-man platoon system. You have to be able to roll people in and out. And I think it's kind of interesting that Ohio State is talking about countering with that on defense to go with what Clemson was talking about offensively.
Yeah, it's just fun. It was a fun little article that I came across there, so I wanted to run that by you. And you're right, it's funny. These things have a way of trickling up or trickling down. The challenge, I think, for Chip Kelly was you can do that in college with your roster size. In the NFL, it's hard to rotate that many guys through. You don't have but so many guys active on game day, so you can't carry a 90-man roster out there. So interesting little thing that we came across there. All right, Buck, I don't know how much you saw these preseason games, but last night,
yep.
Did you see well, we can go from one end of the spectrum to the other. Let's start on the good side here. Let's keep things positive. Jameis Winston, to me, last night, watching that, I watched it actually this morning, I saw somebody that absolutely 100% trusts his eyes, that's confident, that's anticipating, that's really kind of starting to master the position with what he's doing with his eyes, moving secondary guys around, just doing a lot of different things on time. You saw him on the move throwing the ball accurately. Patience, had one bonehead throw that got called back to pick down there in the red zone. But outside of that one play, Bucky, he is dialed in right now.
Oh, he's absolutely dialed in. They surround him with the players on the perimeter that will allow him to play the game the way that we thought that he would play the game coming out of Florida State. When you look at this Tampa Bay offense, they have everything that you possibly could want in a skill position. They got speed and DeSean Jackson. They got a number one and Mike Evans. They got two big tight ends and Cameron Braid and O.J. Howard, who also have the flexibility to play in line or out wide. They can push the ball down the field. They have a running back, Doug Martin, who has looked pretty good in the preseason. This offense is going to be dangerous. The one thing that you have to, I guess, kind of make sure with Jameis is that he just kind of stays in his lane. He can be prone to a little gunslinging, which is fine. But with the way this team is constructed, he doesn't have to be a hero. All he needs to do is allow his playmakers to play. And we saw early on how explosive that offense can be. 21 of 28, got the ball to everybody. They went up and down the field the way that they wanted to. This Tampa Bay team is for real. They are a legitimate playoff contender.
No question. And Adam Humphreys got involved a little bit in the middle of the field as well. So there's just a variety of weapons that they can use. On the defensive side of the ball for them, real quick, I'll tell you what jumped out to me. First player off the snap on every single snap was Gerald McCoy. I don't know if he's in better shape this year or if he's fully healthy or what the deal is, but he looked like he was 5 years younger. He was disruptive. He was explosive last night. So they've got a really, really good young front, and they can get him playing at that level that he was at last night. This team can go a long way now.
Yeah, this team can go a long way. You know, the great thing about the Buccaneers, they're the team that's featured on Hard Knocks. So, and being able to watch them and kind of get more insight on Gerald McCoy, who's been one of the stars of the show. You know, I always knew he was a really good player, but now when they start showing some of the all 22, when the scouts and the coaches are looking, his get off is remarkable. And, you know, maybe it's been a long time since I really scouted him since coming out of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I remember him being a really good player at the point of attack and all that. I do not remember seeing a first step like that at Oklahoma. Do you remember him having a first step like that? Because you remember the debate was between Ndamukong Suh and Gerald McCoy. And I was more of an Ndamukong Suh fan because they played in the same conference. Ndamukong Suh had more production and was a little more dominant to me the way that he played. But Gerald McCoy's athleticism kind of stands out. And he always downplays it on the Hard Knocks show.
Yeah, no, I thought he was kind of that quintessential, you know, three technique. I didn't think he had the power or the strength that Sue had. And Sue had so much production. But McCoy, I thought, had a little more wiggle to him, you know, working on a half a man, working on an edge, and being disruptive. But I don't know if – I haven't seen the second episode of Hard Knocks, so maybe they showed some of that stuff on there.
Yeah, when you see the second episode, they really spent a lot of time with McCoy, and they talked about his ability to take over. And it was funny that he goes into the game and absolutely takes over inside.
Oh, yeah, he did. He did completely. I just, you know, it seems like we've had so many defensive tackles come through the league that have been playing at a high level. I think Aaron Donald probably goes right up there to the top of the list, that he kind of gets lost. But, man, it was just something watching the game last night that jumped out to me. All right, we've done the good. We got to go to the other side, though, now with the Jags.
You think?
And, Bucky, it's a good roster, man. They have a good roster. Offensive lines, you know, wasn't great last night. I know defensively You don't have Jalen Ramsey out there. Offensively, you don't have Leonard Fournette. So they don't have their complete team out there. I'm always hesitant to completely judge a team based off what we see in the preseason. But what I said about Jameis Winston, the confidence, trusting his eyes, not guiding the ball, see it, rip it. I would say the exact opposite from what we saw from Blake Bortles. There's just not a lot of confidence there. The head's down after every single rep. Leaving plays out on the field. And you can, again, this is something that's hard to do from 3,000 miles away. But you just feel like he's letting the air out of the balloon for this football team.
You know, I wrote about this today. I said that they have to pull the plug on the Blake Bortles experiment. If the Jaguars are really serious about changing the culture and winning games, they have to sit him on the bench. Because when you're telling everybody else on the team that they have to earn their spot, when you look at Blake Bortles, I don't know how you can tell the rest of the team in good conscience that this guy has earned the number one job. You talked about him taking kind of the wind out of the sails of the Jaguars ship. He is, because he cannot make – the basic throws that a franchise quarterback is supposed to make. And we begin to see the things on Twitter where guys are kind of barking at him, kind of disappointed. They're at the breaking point. And if he is the guy that is their opening day starter, I just don't think he inspires the kind of confidence and optimism that you want for a team that on paper looks like they should be able to contend for a playoff spot.
To me, confidence and trust, you know, those are a couple things you have to have as a quarterback. And right now I see a guy doesn't look very confident. He's not trusting what he's seeing. And it's just almost like we used to always say, you always have coaches tell you, hey, don't pull the string, right, when you're throwing a football. Don't pull the string. Just let it go. Now, there's a couple balls down the field last night. You can see him trying to guide the ball and trying to – he's inside his own head, man. He's just got to let it go. And I think – and maybe even to his benefit. Look, he's got $19 million coming to him next year, so he's going to be just fine. But I almost think it'll be to his benefit to kind of just step back a little bit. You know, he's trying to work on so many mechanical things, and that to me can be a slippery slope too. When you're trying to change everything you've done that's gotten you to a certain point, you know, I don't know, maybe it's best kind of to not listen to all the noise. And we've talked about the release before. It's not where you want it, but man, he was playing, whatever you thought of him, he was playing better with that elongated release than he is when he's trying to do whatever he's doing right now. It's not working.
No, it's not working. And I think what he is right now is a player who is really struggling with his confidence. And to be honest, maybe they asked him to do too much too soon. And I know they lost a lot of games. But DJ, in writing this, he averages 37.1 pass attempts per game. That is the fourth most in NFL history behind, like, guys like Andrew Luck, Drew Bledsoe, Dan Marino. They have basically attempted to make him something that he's not, something that he wasn't at UCF. He was more of a complimentary player at UCF. He had a guy, Storm Johnson, a running back, who was really the focal point of that Central Florida offense. He made some plays. He caught fire. But Blake Bortles has been asked to do things that he's not really capable of doing. And even though Doug Marrone has talked about a perfect game for us would be zero pass attempts, we want to run the ball, you cannot hide the quarterback. In every game, you need your quarterback to make a play or two to get you over the hump. Blake Bortles right now is so in his head that he can't make those plays. And even though I'm not a huge fan of Chad Henne, when he jumps on the field, is more decisive, more confident, and the offense responds just because he acts like he knows what he's supposed to do, and the guys kind of believe and trust him to do that.
I didn't get a chance to see the second half. I know Brandon Allen looked like he had a nice day according to the box score. Did you get to see a chance to see him let it go?
You know, he did a really good job. The ball came out. He did a really good job on the move. He made some bootleg throws, got it to the playmakers. Here's what I will say that is really that really stepped out to me in the second half. D.D. Westbrook was underrated in the draft process. D.D. Westbrook had 6 catches, 131 yards. At times, he looked like the best wide receiver on the field. He and Brandon Allen did a really good job of connecting. They made some big plays. So, yes, Brandon Allen played well. D.D. Westbrook played well. This Jacksonville Jaguars team is talented. They just are missing one guy. They have 21 guys, but the one guy that they really need to play well, the quarterback, has not played well. They have to make a decision if they seriously want to contend and compete this year.
All right, so be honest with me. Don't just try and puff me up because this is my guy here. Brandon Allen was the one that I stumped for. It's kind of my favorite mid-round pick. And I went back and looked at my notes, and I wrote down Jimmy Garoppolo. So when you watched him last night, did you see any similarities there with him and Jimmy G?
Let's see, Jimmy Garoppolo. Let's see. What I will say about Brandon Allen, he got the ball out. The ball was accurate. He didn't look like the stage was too big for him. He certainly was comfortable and confident. I think if they gave him an extended run, maybe you would see some of those Jimmy G traits. I think Jimmy Garoppolo's arm may be a little stronger. But the next time I look at the Jags, I will pay closer attention to him, because it's funny, because you never really think about him being a guy in the mix. But now that Doug Marrone has talked about the competition being open, I do believe you kind of have to spend more time looking at Brandon Allen to see, does he have a viable chance to be a starter for this team, or are the Jaguars a team that we're going to talk about being in the run for one of these quarterbacks that may be in a 2018 class?
So selfishly, this is all I need from Brandon Allen here. Let's be selfish for a minute. I need him to get the starting job. I need him to win 13 games. I need him to go to the Pro Bowl. And then I can somehow justify how I had him ranked over Dak Prescott. Okay, that's all I'm asking. It's not much. Right?
Look, we know how these things go. sometimes you can do it, but I think it all depends on situation and circumstance. Brandon Allen very well could play nice in this offense, because the pieces that they have around him, if you can keep him on a 22 to 25, maybe 27 pass attempt pitch count, he certainly can do it, because the weapons around him can make plays. He just has to make sure he doesn't throw it to the other team, which has been the biggest problem with Blake Bortles.
Yeah, he went 10 of 15, 144 yards, a touchdown, led that final drive all the way inside the five, and then they went, I think, four straight pass attempts inside the 5 yard line. And they did a good job of bringing up how they, the Jags want to be physical, but they're throwing it five times when you got a first and, you know, a first and goal from the five. But yeah, I thought he looked good. He looked good rolling out of the pocket. I think the Bucks blitzed a bunch on that final drive, and he was able to handle it well. So, looking up for your guy, Brandon Allen.
Oh yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that, Sully. All right. Quickly, real quick, Buck, on the other two games, Eagles, defense is going to be salty. We've talked about that up front. And Barnett had another good game. Congratulations, Sully, on that one. But up front, they are really, really good. And on the back end, Darby had a pick. He looked very comfortable, almost had another one. Shoot, they dropped maybe three or four picks in that game. Rasul Douglas got his hands on one, wasn't able to finish. Didn't think Wentz was particularly sharp. No Jason Peters in the lineup for them. That's a huge loss. They couldn't run the ball again. Which is something to keep an eye on. But I think you get Peters healthy, kick Lane Johnson back over to the right side, you get better at two spots. I think you'll see some things there. You saw Alshon Jeffrey get involved. Aguilar had a couple nice catches there in the slot. And then Corey Clement did a nice job, running back, the undrafted rookie running back out of Wisconsin. He played well. For Buffalo, I know everybody's going to talk about this team struggling and, you know, okay, what are they going to do offensively through the air, and they have no receivers, this, that, and the other. Shady McCoy looked good last night. He looked really good. So I don't know if any of the any of our listeners, I'm sure some of them are fantasy football folks, even though that's going to be a bad football team, LeSean McCoy is going to have a big year.
You know, it's tough, because when you look at the Buffalo Bills and you think about the players that had, Sammy Watkins was an explosive threat. They chose to let him go. Ronald Darby, obviously at, you know, his rookie year, he was considered one of the best cornerbacks in the business. They elect to get rid of those guys. And in my estimation, they're trying to build more of a blue-collar team that is kind of built in the mold of their head coach, Sean McDermott. The tricky thing about going that route, and I obviously he comes from Carolina, he kind of saw it successfully work offensively when they went to Super Bowl 50, but defensively, that defense was a dominant defense with the linebacker core, Thomas Davis, Luke Kuechly, some of the other guys, Josh Norman, those guys that played well. When I look at the Bills, I just don't know offensively who scares you outside of Shady McCoy. And if you don't have anyone on the outside that scares you, you drop eight in the box, maybe nine in the box. I just don't know how Shady McCoy exists. And with Tyrod Taylor, your quarterback, and I don't think we will say that Tyrod Taylor is an elite quarterback, so he needs to have the pieces around him to succeed. They have robbed him of all those pieces. And so I hate to say this, but maybe what we saw last night might be what we will see for most of the season from that offense. And then the question becomes, is this defense good enough to keep them in games?
Look, the good thing is they have a good offensive line. Shady's really good. He's going to be able to pop some here and there, even when he sees a loaded box. I still think his vision is so good. He is so explosive. He'll be able to crease and get some plays there. And then throwing the football, I mean, golly, Zay Jones made a couple nice plays for him. There's some upside there with him. Anquan Boldin, though, you know, look, he's He's going to catch everything you throw to him, Buck. He's not getting away from anybody
he
out
can't
there.
Run. They
the
can't
one
separate.
Pick,
they don't have
the
anyone
one
who
pick.
Can separate. So is Zay
no.
Jones going to be their deep threat? Like, who is going to be
There's
the
no
guy?
There's no easy throws. The easy throws in this offense are going to be screens to LeSean McCoy. That's the only place you can find easy completions. So, anyways, I think it's going to be a long year for the Bills, but I am still bullish on LeSean McCoy. All right, Cutler's debut. Buck, anything stand out to you there? I thought it was... Yeah, look, he had a couple nice throws, nice little play action, hit the little skinny post there to Devontae Parker, missed a couple others. Kind of what you'd expect, look a little bit rusty, needs to get a little more work here with this team to get comfortable.
Yeah, but I'm encouraged by Jay Cutler going to Miami. I think it's actually a great fit. I think this is the best supporting cast that he's had in his career, and I think that's saying a lot when he's played in Chicago with Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall. What I like about the Dolphins' offense and their wide receiver core in particular, they are talented. They're versatile, and they're explosive. Devontae Parker is really going to take a big step this year, running the routes. There's a play that they had called back, but Jay Cutler steps up, kind of fires a rocket down the sideline to Devontae Parker, catch it, gets there's a penalty that brings it back. But he and Kenny Stills, I think both of those guys have the ability to take the top off the defense. Then with Jarvis Landry working the middle of the field, and also Julius Thomas, who can be a red zone weapon, Jay Cutler has plenty of weapons, and with Jay Ajayi behind him, they can run the football. It's just a matter of Jay being comfortable and Jay really adhering to the premise of playing winning football. Avoid the risky throws. Allow his guys to work. The Dolphins should be fine because I believe Jay Cutler is a huge upgrade over what Ryan Tannehill was.
Yeah, no, I think you know, there's a chance this offense could be really, really explosive with what they have on the outside and with Cutler's familiarity. I just think he missed a couple throws. You won't see him miss once he's had a little more time under his belt to get comfortable there and get reacclimated to being on a football field. But Baltimore's defense in that game, the front, maybe not, many people aren't familiar with some of these names, Matt Judon, Urban out there. They had some guys that pushed the line of scrimmage against a pretty good offensive line. Mm-hmm. And the corners, Jimmy Smith played really, really well. I think they've got a really good secondary. When you look at the safety position with Weddle and Jefferson, and you've got, you know, hopefully Marlon Humphrey can get healthy and have a good run for this football team. But you've already got Brandon Carr on the other side right now. So they've got a lot of depth and a lot of talent on this defense. I just think some of the names maybe people aren't as, you know, familiarized with in terms of being Ravens. But, man, this is still a good group. Brandon Williams did a nice job pushing the pocket, who just got paid on the defensive front. Mosley's out there running around. So this team, I don't know, you know, people kind of think they've lost their way a little bit. They haven't been able to run the football, they've become pass happy. But I think they are going to have one of the better defenses they've had in the last few years.
You know, if they can continue to – stay with the Ravens way, and you obviously work there, but my estimation from the outside in is this is a team that should be built around their defense, built around a tough, rugged running game, and then the passing game comes after that. If they kind of stick to those principles, the Baltimore Ravens can win a ton of games. If they skew more towards being a pass-heavy team with Joe Flacco, who can be prone to turn the ball over, they won't win as many games as this roster looks like they can win on paper, because defensively they can go toe-to-toe with anybody. They're a hard-nosed team, and they're being able to run the football. And the guy that I'm going to tell you to keep your eye on, Smoke Mizell, Taquan Mizell from Virginia, he is someone that is an undrafted free agent, but he got a little something to him as a runner and the ability to catch the ball out the backfield. I expect him to make the team. I think he might be a guy that can kind of work his way into contention, has really been a contributor this season.
I like that. You dropping nuggets on us like that. All right, Buck, let's go through the games that we have coming up this weekend. And just kind of one thing that I'm looking for here, you can piggyback that, or if you've got something else you're keeping an eye on, throw it out there. Start with the game I'm going to be at is Rams Raiders. Look, Sammy Watkins, get a chance to see him out there with Jared Goff. Can he get comfortable, and can he open up this offense a little bit? They did not run the ball well last week with Gurley. Maybe you can get some things going vertically down the field, create a little more space, help this running game, help this quarterback going. I'm excited to see Sammy Watkins and see what he looks like for the Rams against the Raiders.
I think it's a great move. I think what Sean McVay has done in LA, he's recreated what he had in Washington on the perimeter. Sammy Watkins can play the DeSean Jackson role. Robert Woods can be the Pierre Garçon. Cooper Kupp is now Jamison Crowder. Your tight ends, either one of them, Tyler Higbee or Jarrett Everett, one of those guys will play the Jordan Reed role. And then the X factor really is Tavon Austin. And I believe, for whatever reason, I don't have any insight, but in my head I'm thinking Tavon Austin would be a nice change of pace back or third down weapon out the backfield. maybe they use some of the skills that he displayed at West Virginia and find a way to use him as a matchup player against linebackers. I don't know, just taking it, playing the video game. I think that would be a nice mix for him. But I do believe they've given Jared Goff some weapons, and if this defense can get back to playing the way that we think that they're going to play, particularly when Aaron Donald gets back, I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing or what I think I will see from the LA Rams.
Tavon Woodhead, I like your thinking right there. That, Buck.
Let's play around with him.
Madden comes out, we'll make that happen. let's go Carolina, Tennessee. Christian McCaffrey, that's the one I'm selfishly looking forward to seeing what he's doing.
Yeah, I want to see Christian McCaffrey. Last week they showcased him as a runner. How about this week? Just give the football fans a little taste of what he can do in the passing game.
Split him out.
Let's split him out. Let's let him do what he does in the open field. I want to see that. The other thing I want to see, let's hope that Marcus Mariota gets a little more playing time. I want to see how he's continuing to gel with those guys on the outside. Can they get this passing game on track? Because they can run the ball. We know they're going to be able to run the ball and smash it down the field. But for them to take that next step in their development, they need to be a little more explosive in the passing game. Let's see if some of these young guys can step up and make some plays for Marcus.
Kansas City, Cincinnati, to me, it's all about Mahomes. Let's see a little bit more Mahomes. I want to see that. Look, I know he's comfortable. You can throw bubbles and get him going on that stuff, get him on the move. I want to see Mahomes settle in that pocket, get through a progression, and stick some balls on people in tight windows. That to me, I want to see the progression from week one to week two. Everybody's excited about the arm strength, no question. I thought his feet were improved, Bucky. Now I want to see this kid play in the pocket and really, really push the ball down the field. It's a lot to ask in his second preseason games, but man, he's created a lot of buzz and a lot of hype, and I want to see him go from step one to step two here in the second week.
Yeah, I absolutely want to see that. I want to see him continue to grow up and graduate and play what we call big boy football. Let's make some big boy throws. Let's push the ball down the field. Let's get away from the layups that he was able to use in the first game. Let's see how he continues to progress, because make no mistake about it, the Kansas City Chiefs are looking to see how Patrick Mahomes progresses throughout the preseason and on the practice field to make a determination what they want to do in 2018. He teased us a little bit. Let's see if he can continue it. And then on Cincinnati's side, I want to continue to see these young guys that they've added to the mix. Joe Mixon, Josh Malone has been good. Maybe we'll get a chance to see Ross on the outside. They are far more explosive than they've been last year. Let's see if these young guys can make an impression that leads us to believe that this offense can get back on track.
All right, let's roll through these next ones here. Dallas Cowboys, to me, I want to see this offensive line. I know they're replacing a couple pieces. Can this offensive line be consistent? Talk about some of the new pieces you have in place. Byron Bell, last week against the Rams, I thought he struggled a little bit. I also thought that Lyle Collins, who just got some money, he struggled a little bit, especially in pass protection. So I want to see this offensive line, see if they can put on a better performance this week.
Yeah, for me, I want to go on to the other side. I need to see Scott Tolzien make a play. I need to see Scott Tolzien show us that he can make some things happen, because if he has to start in place of Andrew Luck, it could be a problem. We need to make sure that this guy can play.
All right, that's a good one there. All right, I'm going to give you I'll give you the floor on this next one here, because we've got Green Bay and Washington. Anything that jumps out to you on that one, Buck?
You know, Green Bay, for me, I want to see Jamal Williams. I want to see the Williams kids get an opportunity to run the football. He has an opportunity. Ty Montgomery may be a little dinged up. This is an opportunity for him not only to work his way into the rotation, maybe he can be in consideration as a starter. I want to see how he plays.
All right, Brett Hundley, to me, is another one I want to see. Can he show some things in this football game? Because a team like Jacksonville, Bucky, you know,
yep,
maybe looking to add another quarterback into the mix. I would kick the tires on somebody like Brett Hundley. Let's see what he looks like in this game. So something to keep an eye on there. Greg Robinson, I had not had a chance to study that game yet. Everything that you read say that he held up okay for Detroit after a change of scenery, a guy that we all knew was infinitely talented, just didn't happen for him with the Rams. He's gonna have to fill in now. You got Taylor Decker out for a few games this season. They're going to need him in Detroit. I want to see him against a Jets front that does have some talented pieces there.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to see how he performs, how he responds to the challenge and the opportunity. This is a big opportunity for him. He has an opportunity to get on the field and start. Let's see if he can dust off some of the talent that made him the second overall pick when he came out.
All right, next question. All right, let's go to Texans versus the Patriots. This is kind of a bigger picture thing for me. I want to see this Texans secondary, which is very talented. take on this New England receiving core that is diverse and has a lot of different skill sets and can hit you really, really quick. And it's not beyond Belichick to let some of his starters go a little bit here in the preseason. So we'll see what happens there. I'm looking forward to watching that skill matchup. I know that defensive front for Houston is filthy, but Wade Tom Brady get the ball out of his hands, it's tough to get home. So I want to see, can their secondary get up in these receivers, and can they compete?
Yeah, I want to see that too, but I also want to see what Jimmy Garoppolo does. I know we're talking about a guy that's only played two regular season games, but he's been the star of the preseason. As we continue to get to the end of the preseason when people begin the game plan, I just want to continue to see Jimmy Garoppolo shine, because the more he shines, the more everyone is inclined to think that he can be a franchise quarterback.
All right, Trubisky, round two versus the Arizona Cardinals. Was sharp last week. Can he keep it going?
Yeah, this is a big test for him, because the one thing that we know about the Arizona Cardinals, they're going to play man-to-man and they're going to blitz the snot out of you. So we will get an opportunity to gauge his composure, his poise, and his toughness. Can he stare down the barrel of a loaded gun, make the accurate throw to the players on the outside? If he does that, I think he continues to close the gap on Mike Glennon as their starter.
My Denver offensive line versus the San Francisco 49er front seven that all of a sudden has got some pretty salty members up there in that front seven.
Yeah, absolutely. The San Francisco 49ers played pretty good defense, and the guy that we both fell in love with early in the process, not Solomon Thomas, but also Reuben Foster. Reuben Foster goes later in the first round. I think they might have gotten a bargain at the bottom first round. This dude is a legitimate player. He's a difference maker, a tempo setter. They have some really intriguing young pieces on their front seven. Let's see how they stand up against the Denver Broncos team. They need to be able to run it. And let's see if Paxton Lynch can do something to maybe nudge ahead of Trevor Siemian.
Yeah, my money, I think, is on Siemian in that battle. All right, T.J. Watt, round two, two sacks first week. Now he gets to go up against the Atlanta Falcons. Can he keep it rolling?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, he had two sacks. One of those was a gimme sack. But I think the thing that has been interesting coming out of Pittsburgh Steelers camp, they said that James Harrison is going to be the relief pitcher. T.J. Watt is going to be the starter. So he's going to get plenty of opportunities to rush the passer. They will use Harrison in limited capacity, hopefully going into the regular season. Let's see if T.J. Watt is the real deal. Can he do it now that he has everyone's attention on the other side of the ball?
All right, this one, look, we always want to see how the starters are doing in these games. That's what matters in the long run. But to me, I want to see the test of the Chargers' pride on the defensive side of the ball. They gave up a zillion points to the Seahawks last week. I know it's primarily with their second, third string, with their backups, Bucky. They play the Saints, another dynamic offense. I don't know how much we'll see of Drew Brees and company. But I want to see, under Gus Bradley, what kind of pride this group has as a whole for the Chargers. They cannot give up 47 points in that game. That was embarrassing. So I want to see how this Chargers defense responds.
Yeah, it was absolutely embarrassing. You know, the tough thing is they played pretty well that opening drive. Phillip Rivers went right down the field, found a way to find Antonio Gates for a touchdown. You like those things if you're Andy Lynn. Defensively, they were okay early, but then the wheels fell off. And so, in looking at some of the reports and looking at some of the video that we were able to see from the joint practice sessions from the Saints and the Chargers, it looked like the Saints were continuing to have their way. That is problematic for a team that wants to play that single high coverage that Gus Bradley made famous, first in Seattle, then in Jacksonville.
All right, last one here. Looking forward to seeing the number one overall pick, Myles Garrett, going up against the Giants offensive line that has some issues at tackle, Bucky. And I think this is – I'm going to go ahead and predict it. You can save this audio, Sully. It probably won't happen. But I'm going to go ahead and say that Myles Garrett will have the biggest highlight of week two. So he's going to do something funky.
Wow, something splashy. Wow, that's – That I mean, it,
now he won't play. You watch, he won't play. But that's my guess.
It's funny. You're gonna talk about the pass rusher. I'm gonna talk about the quarterbacks for the Cleveland Browns. Which guy is in line to be the starting quarterback? Brock Osweiler gets another start. What you hear? Maybe they're comfortable with him being the starter. I want to see what DeShone Kizer does now that he has moved up to number two in the rotation. This game, he gets to play against better competition. Can he continue to build on what he showed at the end of the game against the Saints last week? If he does, it becomes really interesting who Hugh Jackson elects to start in week three of the preseason.
No question. Looking forward to keep an eye on that quarterback situation there with the Cleveland Browns. Bucky, before we get to an interview with one of the under-the-radar players that we have in college football this year, I want to go through my recent trip that I just took. Went out to Florida State for a couple days, had a chance to spend some time with their football team, talk to their football team. But I got a chance to watch them practice for a couple days, which was awesome, Bucky. And this is a team, I don't know what the perception is from the outside, but having a chance to get inside this program for a couple days, Jimbo Fisher doesn't mess around, man. Mm-mm. That is a physical, intense practice. They mix it up pretty good out there. I know they got Alabama. It's going to be kind of the game of the year, week one. But this team has a lot of speed on the outside, a lot of athletes. But, man, I was impressed with just the operation that Jimbo Fisher's running there. This is organized, and it was intense. They were getting after it.
You know, this is a team that is always in the mix, and I can't tell you how excited I am to see this opening game. Florida State, Alabama is one of those things that you normally wouldn't expect to see until the playoff time. But to see two teams that are loaded with talent on both sides of the ball, that is exactly what you want to see. I want to see Sweat, the pass rusher from Florida State. I want to see if he can be a legitimate guy because he kind of came on late. He was hot. And then in Alabama, there's so many guys. But I had a scout tell me this week that their defensive backfield is basically an NFL football factory. All of these guys look like they just kind of come out of the mold. Cookie cutter, all of them are 6'1", 6'2", long arms, can play multiple positions in the back end. And so if you're an NFL team and you're looking for a defensive back, you have to go to Alabama. And they tell me that Minkah Fitzpatrick might be the best defensive back that we'll see in college football outside of Derwin James.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, there were probably five or six different scouts there over the couple days that I was at Florida State. Got a chance to talk with a bunch of those guys. And one of the names they mentioned from Alabama is they just said, look, all these defensive tackles they've produced over the last few years, Payne, Deron Payne, is better than all of them. And he's a guy that hasn't been getting as much attention. So that's a name keep an eye on in that game. But I'm going to give you two names from Florida State that you need to know when you watch this game against Alabama. First one, first of all, everybody knows Derwin James is the best player on the field as advertised, big time. And they love him at the school, does everything the right way. He's easy. Brian Burns, sophomore defensive end. He's 6'5". He's about 220 something pounds. He's long and lean. I think he had 9 sacks as a true freshman last year. They couldn't block him. I mean, they could not block him the 2 days I was there. He was dominant. So keep an eye on him. He could mess things up a little bit for that Alabama offense. And then on the offensive side of the ball, everybody knows they got a big-time freshman that's in the mix now, Cam Akers. It's, you know, Bucky, from the opening, it's a big-time talent. But I'm going to give you a guy that's a junior receiver. He's number 18, Auden Tate, 6'5", 225 pounds. He is beautiful. I mean, he looks like Mike Evans on the hoof. He is beautiful, and he can go get it. Just one of those guys, when he's covered, he's still open, huge catch radius. He's not a blazer, but he's plenty fast enough, and I think he's got some big things in store for him this year. So 99 defensive end, 18 the wide receiver. Keep an eye on both those kids.
I mean, you're talking about a talented collection of players. Florida State always has guys that you have to go down and look at because they just have the athleticism, the size, and the talent. And then they play in a winning program. These guys are used to playing at an NFL level because they practice at that level. I'm excited for this opening game. I think it will be must-see TV. I can't wait to see what the quarterback, Francois, does against that Alabama defense.
He's got a live arm. He's added some weight. He's thick.
Everybody he's tough. He's
everybody
tough.
I know he's tough because he got his butt kicked last year and just kept popping up. So they got some backs. They got a good looking squad down there. I mean, it's a tough challenge, Alabama week one. I don't think the speed will be a problem for them at all. My thing, I would say, okay, if you're going to have a question, would be how is this offensive line going to stack up against Alabama's defensive front? That'll be a big challenge for them. But I also think the athletes Florida State has up front on the defensive line can give Alabama some trouble. So I think early on, look, a couple weeks away, I'm going to go low-scoring affair. Not going to call a winner yet, but I'm going to say low-scoring affair Florida State-Alabama.
You know, it's funny because in this game, the first thing that comes to mind, can Florida State stand up to the physicality that Alabama is going to bring? This is going should be a heavyweight fight. I want to see if Alabama, because still in my mind, I'm thinking the old Alabama is going to reappear. The old slobber knocker, we're going to run it down your throat, that's going to reappear. And is Florida State mentally and physically ready to stand up to having to tackle Bo Scarborough over and over and over again while also having to deal with Calvin Ridley on the outside?
No question. That's going to be a fun one. But, Bucky, one of the things I tease at the top of the show is I've got something I'm writing. It's coming out early next week about five players that have good reputation in the media and the public, but when you talk to scouts, they're even higher thought of. And these guys have generated a lot of buzz in the scouting community. We've seen in years past, you know, a guy like last year, Mitchell Trubisky, kind of come out of nowhere and be a top five pick. We see it every year. Carson Wentz, maybe some people weren't thinking about him. He goes way up there. You have different names that kind of emerge throughout the fall that maybe we weren't talking all that much about prior to the season. So one of those names is a running back, Kalen Ballage from Arizona State, who we had a chance to visit with at the Pac-12 media day. And Bucky, this is a big back, physical, can really, really go. He's going to time really, really fast. But I thought was a fascinating conversation. So to kind of, before we close out the episode today, this is a name, if you're a fan of college football, keep an eye on. Let's roll back our conversation we had with Arizona State running back Kalen Ballage.
All right, excited to be joined by one of the top running backs in college football. That's Kalen Ballage from Arizona State here. And Kalen, first of all, tell us about the decision. We're NFL guys, former NFL scouts. So tell us about the decision you made to go ahead and come back to school.
For me, really, it was just more kind of from a family standpoint. You know, I promised my mom that I would get my degree. I had the opportunity to do that in December, graduating 3.5 years. And that was something that was really important to me. And just my family is just really big on finishing what you started, you know. So I wanted to kind of just go about it in that way, in that manner, and that's what I did.
So I'm looking at the stats, and they say that you are the only player to do this. 8 tubs in a game?
Yeah.
8 touchdowns.
It was some Wildcat stuff, though. Weren't you doing some Wildcat stuff?
Yeah, I was doing some Wildcat. I had a receiving touchdown and then like a 75-yarder and then some Wildcat stuff.
I got a chance. I've studied him, man. He can go. He's got some power. He's got some speed. He's got a lot going for him. What are you trying to work on this offseason and get yourself ready to go?
Everything. I want to polish everything every year. I'm kind of OCD. I'm kind of like a perfectionist type guy, so I just work on everything. I want to be, you know, one of those guys that you can, instead of bringing a slot receiver in to run routes, I want you to just motion me out the backfield on third down, you know. So I pride myself on being a football player.
You know, in doing that, obviously right in your town, there's one of the best running backs in the National Football League in David Johnson.
Yeah.
Obviously, he is a guy that is a complete back. He can run it. He can catch and do some things.
Absolutely.
Have you been able to look at any of his stuff and say, you know what, I think I can do that and I can take some of that and put in my game?
Absolutely. And actually, you know, the crazy part about it is I mean, all through high school, there was another running back that I went to school with. So I was the one – I just basically played slot. You know, we did split backs, but we were always on the field at the same time. So I've been doing all this stuff forever, and now it's really becoming a big thing. So I kind of already have that tool in my toolbox. So, you know, Le'Veon Bell is somebody I look up to. It's kind of like my big brother. Me and him talk often. So, he does the same thing. So I think it's important, and I like doing that.
How'd you guys get connected, and what's your relationship like?
Alden Darby, he's a safety that used to play at Arizona State, like, I want to say 5 or 6 years ago. Really good. And he went and played for the Steelers, and him and Le'Veon got close. So he connected us together.
It's a good mentor to have, man.
No, it was a very good mentor. So in thinking about Le'Veon Bell and everyone talking about him maybe being the best back, when you watch him, what is the one thing that fascinates you about his game?
Well, everybody will tell you his patience. His patience is amazing. I mean, they were kind of doing some ESPN thing, and they were showing that, like, he on average stays behind the line of scrimmage, like, for 2.5 seconds at a time, like, just standing there, like, doing nothing, and then he just waits, and he sees a crease, and he hits it. So,
I'll tell you what, man. The thing that's interesting to me is when you have a big back like you that can do the dirty work, but then you don't have to come off the field. It's such a huge advantage for an offense. How about the terminology with the new OC coming in there? How has that all changed in terms of what you guys are going to be doing next year?
It's been fine. I've always been pretty football savvy, and I kind of just have the common sense factor that you need, I think, to be elite football player. I kind of do things on my own before I have to, you know, before people tell me to do it. So I've just had the ability to really study under Coach Napier and figure out what kind of things he has in store for our team.
Are you hoping you get a little bit more of a workload? I know you guys got a couple backs. You got a talented backfield, but look, I'm just going through your game logs last year. You never had 20 carries.
No,
is that something you're lobbying for?
I don't think I've ever had 20 games in my 20 carries career, my college career. So, you know, I'm not really too worried about it. I trust the process, and you know, if there's a game where I need to have 20 carries, then that game will come.
Well, hopefully it comes early and often for
early
you
enough,
guys, because you guys certainly need to get that offense back on track. You have potential. You have potential to be a contender. But they need to make sure that you are a focal point in the game. I'm excited to see what takes place. I wish you the best going forward.
Thank you. I appreciate
Bucky,
it.
Bucky, you know I don't swear. This is a badass.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Right here, man.
I appreciate
Hey, best of luck this fall, man. We look forward to watching.
Thank you.
All right, Bucky, I'll tell you what, that's an impressive kid. And we had a chance to visit with players from each school up there. And We had some of our favorites. I think Kalen Ballage there from Arizona State has to be right up there towards the top of the list. I don't know how many games Sun Devils are going to win this year, Bucky, but there are going to be a lot of scouts rolling through there to check out this kid.
Well, absolutely. They certainly are going to check him out. You know, the thing that Ty Graham was so enthusiastic about him, I'm excited to see him when he plays.
Yeah, he's a good one. So height, weight, speed, and definitely passed the interview test. What an impressive kid. So looking forward to watching Kalen Ballage. Keep an eye on him this fall. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Again, we're trying to emphasize this as we lead up to the season. We've got some cool stuff coming your way. We can't divulge it yet, but trust me, we've got some neat stuff on the way here on Move the Sticks. Encourage you, instead of just downloading, just subscribe to the podcast. Much easier that way. It'll automatically download for you in the future, and we promise to keep throwing some good stuff in your ears here as we move forward. So thanks for checking out Move the Sticks. For Bucky Brooks, I'm Daniel Jeremiah. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.